We've been spending this year talking about how we as Christians are called to freedom and what a great blessing it is to be able to escape the things that are so necessary in this broken world. We don't want to live the way that people have to live when they interact only with this broken world, because it's just not a pleasant way to live. We have spent some time talking about Jesus and his sacrifice. In fact, we began talking about Jesus, emphasizing the idea that he washed us from our past sins, even the sin of killing Jesus and killing even his followers, like the Apostle Paul. He removed the stain of sin, not just paid the penalty for sin, but cleansed our conscience. That's what Peter says in 1 Peter 3. Jesus continues, though, to work for us. It's not just what was in our past, but it's the things that we now enjoy in Jesus, overcoming Satan's temptation. He helps us to keep his word, and he perfects our love for God. And because of all of that, we can overcome evil. We can overcome temptations because Jesus addressed more than just what was in my past. He addresses what's going on right now, today, and we can be so thankful for that. We talked about how Jesus helps us overcome temptation by trying to understand the whole process of temptation from James, the first chapter. We spent some time talking about the essence of temptation last time I was with you. Today, we're going to talk about the process of temptation. And then next time we're together, we're going to talk about how that all looks in our lives right now. So let's start in the book of James this morning, and we're going to look at James, the first chapter. We'll begin reading in verse 12, and we'll read down through verse 15. And as we do this, I want you to think about how temptation is a process and how it eventually works its way into being sin in our lives. So James, the first chapter at verse 12, James says, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he hath been approved, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God does not tempt, God cannot be tempted with evil, and he tempteth no man. Each man is tempted," and here's where he gets into the process, "each man is tempted when he's drawn away by his own lust and enticed. Then when the lust, when it hath conceived, bears sin, and the sin, when it is full grown, brings death." So as we begin to think about the process of temptation, I want you to remember a day. Maybe it's the day that you went to the county fair and you were watching all of those carnival rides and you were thinking, that looks like so much fun. Until the day when it wasn't quite so much fun. Now, maybe your day of shame is the day that you rode the zipper at the LA County Fair and puked all over your date. I won't tell you who that was. Maybe your day of shame is kind of like mine, when you were on a cruise to the Caribbean, decided to go out with 40 of your fellow cruise passengers on a sightseeing expedition on a sailing catamaran, and then helped them experience what explosive seasickness looks like. Kim will probably be more than willing to fill in some of the details. But you can remember the day, I'm sure every one of you has one, when it looked like it was fun, and then all of a sudden, it stopped being fun, and you had this thought, what on earth was I thinking? Now, here's the process that generally characterizes a day like that. That looks like a lot of fun. Now, man, do I want out of this? But I can't get out. I'm trapped. I'm on the zipper, and it's going 150 miles an hour, and I'm sealed in. In my case, I was in the middle of the ocean on a 40-foot boat, and I couldn't get off. And then there are the awful consequences. Now, what does that look like when we're talking about sin? Well, I said it's a process, and it's just like that day when it stopped being fun. We're first drawn out by our own lust, and we're enticed, and that's the way that the King James says it. And then lust conceives, and when lust conceives, it finishes with sin. So let's think a little bit more about what some of these words mean. When you think about words, and you're especially when you're trying to understand the words that are used biblically, we get in trouble because we think we know what that word means, and sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. So we're gonna look at the words. First, let's look at this idea that we're drawn away. Now, drawn away is from the Greek, as Strong numbers them, number 1828. And there it is in the Greek. I'm not going to try to pronounce it because none of us speak Greek and it wouldn't be very helpful. But Strong says that it's a combination of two Greek words, and it means to draw forth, figuratively, to entice to sin. Now, Thayer, when he defines it, points out that it's only used in this place in the New Testament. So we don't have the advantage of being able to look at how the Greek word was used by writers of the Greek New Testament in other places. So we're going to have to look at the way that it was used in secular writing. Thayer says it means to draw out. Metaphorically, he says, it's to lure, to hunt or fish, and to lure your game. You're familiar with that. You've ever been fishing? You put a worm on a hook, that's your lure, and you put it out in the water, and it entices the fish. Man is allured to satisfy his self, to put away the self-restraint, and to enjoy something that God has made. God made it good, and man, generally speaking, mutilates it and tries to turn it into something that's not good, but it's a lure. It's a trap. It's being enticed. Then he says that we're lured away by our own lusts. Now, let's make sure that we understand this. When you look at this word own, here it is in the Greek, And Strong says it has an uncertain affinity. It means something that pertains to myself, one's own. And by implication, this is what's important. It's private or it's separate. By his acquaintance, when they were alone, apart, aside, due to his own proper or several, his home, his business, his private affairs, severally. It's not something that we're talking about that belongs to everybody. Now, everybody has their own. I have my own, and Kim has her own. Everybody has their own, but when we talk about lust, I own it. It's mine. This is a word that's frequently used throughout the New Testament, 113 different times. But Thayer gets right to the critical issue, and he says, this is pertaining to oneself, one's own, or it belongs to me. My lust is not necessarily your lust. And if it is similar, that doesn't mean that we both have that lust. It means I have it and you have it. Now, that's important. This process of being enticed or drawn away by lust depends upon what I want. You know, not everything appeals to me. I'm one of those people that doesn't particularly like chocolate. Kim thinks that means that I'm probably not a Christian. But chocolate doesn't appeal to me. I have no desire to have chocolate at all. Gambling doesn't appeal to me. I cannot fathom myself ever being tempted to go to a track and bet on horses. I like to watch them run. I watch the Kentucky Derby. I watch the Preakness. I watch the Belmont Stakes. And I kind of follow what horse is doing well, but there's just nothing about that that is particularly tempting to me. I don't feel that. And because I don't feel that, I sometimes think that other people don't feel it. That's not the case. I don't like chocolate. That doesn't mean that everybody doesn't like chocolate. In fact, at my house, if you get between Kim and chocolate, you're probably going to be bitten. But it's my own lust. So remember that. Then he says that we're drawn by lust. So let's make sure that we understand this one. Here it is. It's the Greek word 1939, according to Strong's numbering system. It's used in the New Testament 38 times. And it is a desire. It's a craving. It's a longing. It's desiring something that is forbidden. It's misusing what God created to be good for me. But because I misuse it, it's forbidden. Then he says, we're enticed. So that's the first part of this. We're drawn by our own lust and we're enticed. Here it is. It's the Greek word 1185. Again, that's Strong's numbering system. Now, that Greek word is used in three different places in the New Testament. 2 Peter, the second chapter at verse 18. 2 Peter, the second chapter, verse 14. And then it's used here in the book of James. And the root of this idea that we are enticed, according to Thayer, is that we're baited. We're caught by a bait. Just like a fish is caught by a worm, we're caught by a bait. Metaphorically, it's to beguile, to seduce by blandishments, to allure, to entice, to deceive. Get that? There's the first step in the process. We're drawn away by our own lusts, and we're trapped. Then he says, when lust is conceived, there's the second part of that step. And this is one of those words that you have to be really careful of. Most of us think that we understand what it means when something is conceived, right? We usually think about it in terms of a child being conceived. And that's a good way to think about it. But this word, conceived, there it is. It's the Greek word 48:15. This is used 16 times in the New Testament. And there are a couple that I want you to particularly notice and to make these a part of the way that you think about the whole process of sin. It's the word that's used in Acts, the first chapter, at verse 16, when the apostle Peter is preaching the first gospel sermon. And listen to it carefully. He says, "Brethren, it was needful that the scripture should be fulfilled, which the Holy Spirit spoke before by the mouth of David concerning Judas, who was guide to them that took, that conceived Jesus." What happened in the garden? They came out against him with swords and staves. They took him. They violently arrested him. It's a word that's used in Acts, the 23rd chapter, at verse 17, or excuse me, at verse 27. We'll drop down a little bit in the definition. In Acts 23, at verse 27, the Apostle Paul's arrest by Lysias is described. Now, Lysias is a centurion, and he has essentially rescued Paul from this mob that had taken him. This is the way Lysias describes those events. He says, "This man was seized by the Jews and was about to be slain by them. When I came upon them with the soldiers and rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman." This is the man who was seized or conceived by the mob. That's the word. Same word that's in James, the first chapter. In Acts, the 26th chapter, at verse 21, you see the Apostle Paul describing from his point of view what Lysias has just described. The mob came, they conceived Paul, and they wanted to kill him. So Paul describes it, and Paul describes it this way. "For this cause, the Jews seized me in the temple," or conceived me in the temple, "and they essayed to kill me." Is that what you thought of when you thought of what this word conceived meant? To arrest someone, to take them by force, to control them so that they couldn't get away? Well, that's what James is talking about. That's a lot stronger than the way that I feel like I've always understood this passage in James. I thought that this was kind of a benign thing, but it's not. We're taken captive by sin. And we'll talk about how we break that captivity next week, but understand what James is talking about when he talks about the process of sin. We're drawn away by our own lusts and we are enticed. Then we're conceived. We're taken captive. Lust conceives us. Same way that Jesus was taken captive. And then it's finished. And it brings forth death. That's the awful consequence. Here's that word finished. It's the Greek word number 658, according to Strong's numbering system. And we talked about that a lot. It comes from two Greek words. It's a combined form of two Greek words. And it means to complete entirely, to consummate, to finish. This is the only place that this word is ever used by the Greek New Testament writers. So again, we have to turn to secular literature to help us understand what the importance of this word is in James, the first chapter. It is to perfect. Now, understand, to perfect doesn't mean the same as to make perfect. To perfect means you work through the process all the way to the end. You perfect your income taxes by filling out all of those worksheets to get to the bitter end. Now, it's not perfect, but it's what it means is it perfects. It brings things to its end. It accomplishes. Isn't that strange? That, again, that's a much stronger word than I think of when I think of something that's finished. This is the process of sin. It's a process that we're all familiar with. I joke about it being a process that's like being trapped on the zipper and barfing all over your neighbors. But it's the same kind of thing. It looks like it's going to be fun. We're drawn away by our own lust and we're enticed. We're deceived. Then it conceives, or we get into a situation where we can't get out. And then it's finished. And it brings forth sin, and sin produces death. Now, how do we break that cycle? How do we stop that process from taking place in our lives? That's next week. We're going to talk about stopping the process, but I'll leave you with this as a teaser for next week, because this kind of introduces the idea that we're going to talk about. This is a statement that was made by Viktor Frankl. It's a famous statement. You see it frequently. He says, between stimulus and response, there is space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. We're going to talk about that next week. What a great blessing it is to know that as freed people, we can overcome this process. We short-circuit this whole process. Now, if you're not a freed person, you're going to have a hard time understanding this. And maybe at this point, you're feeling like you're trapped. You're feeling like you can't stop. But I'm here to tell you that Jesus did something very, very important when he died. He made stopping possible. Put him on. Become one of his. We'll help you do that this morning. You can put him on in baptism. And if you're right now one of his and you're thinking like I'm trapped, know that Jesus understands. Know that Jesus will help you to overcome that temptation. There has no temptation overtaken a man, but such as overtaken you, but such as is common to man. But God always makes a way of escape. We're going to talk about that next week.